From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for Sunday, April 24th, 2016, the last Sunday in April. This is our weekly review of all things politics, from what happened last week to what lies ahead in the days ahead. Grab that Sunday paper, your cup of coffee, and we'll try to get the week off to a very good start. And I will tell you, after last night, I'm just worn out mentally. I mean, between you had Thursday, and it was like a stress doubleheader between Jake Arrieta and the no-hitter, and then switching over to elimination game of the Blackhawks and the Kaner with that double overtime win, and then last night with my Blackhawks. Guys, that was something to behold. It really was.
I was delighted to see the victorious score, like I told Steve and Sam and everybody when I got in this morning here. Went to bed seeing that they were down by a point, but it was great news and great way to start the morning to see that they won.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Now you're quoting our engineer there, Bob, who accuses me of...
So, Schwani, it sounds like you didn't even watch it.
No, I must... I did not.
So
slap me around. Go ahead.
I actually got a text from a tweet from one of my very good friends who's White House correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer and very much a big hockey fan. And he tweeted out something to the effect that it looks like the Blackhawks are getting ready to practice their golf swings.
Yeah.
And I said, have you checked the score lately? Because, and I'll admit, you know, going down 3-1 in the first period, and that's the reason I don't go to these home games. You know, it would be like that bad karma kind of thing. But just patience and, you know, scoring 5 unanswered goals and just that beautiful icing on the cake of Hossa's shot from his own blue line into an empty net just to seal the win. I assume you were there, Sam.
I've been around this team for 4 years now, so I'm not really surprised anymore, Rick. I go to all the home games as a reporter. You think they're dead. They're like, you just can't kill them. They're like zombies. They keep coming back again and again and again. And for all the times that you think they can't do it again, not again. They make it work, and I think Dale Weiss said it best. He's a guy they got in a trade from Montreal near the deadline. He said, I've never seen a team or been around a team that is confident to no end. They're down 3-1 in the series in the first round, and they don't have home ice, and he says that there's no panic. He said he's never seen that before.
Yeah, I mean, and sure, it looked very glum going down 3-1, but hey, we're all tied, series tied at 3 apiece, big game 7 in St. Louis.
And they will win.
Yeah.
They will win.
Right.
So I have a lot of faith. I am not one of little faith.
No, I just mean, but I don't know how you could go to sleep with that game going on.
I know. I was thinking about it.
And at least let's be thankful it was not one of those dreaded 8:30 starts.
Yeah, then it would have gone on.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask you one more question? Your superstition continues now by not going to any of these home games for the playoffs. Do you have some sort of a ritual or something that you do while you watch the games at home or wherever you may be, just in terms of a good luck charm?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, this time of year can be very difficult. It's always difficult when the Hawks are on to have anybody pretend to have a conversation with me. That's just not going to happen.
I know that.
But at playoff time, there are times where I basically just kind of have to get up and walk out of the room And I just, you know, just to go out and chill a little bit. And
yeah.
That's really the only thing. I mean, there are times I just have to walk away for a little bit. But I don't throw things at the TV. I don't toss the radio across
the room.
Yeah,
not necessarily, you know, the throwing things at the TV or tossing the radio, but, you know, maybe standing in a corner, you know, on one leg while the game
laying
is
laying in the fetal position.
Yeah, there you go.
There have been times like that. There's no doubt with this team. But no, nothing. Nothing of
laying in the fetal position on the floor watching the game.
Nothing that peculiar.
With the volume off. A blankie.
Yeah. Sucking my thumb. And the games, like I said, I'm so intense into it. And I am yelling at the TV.
I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen that before.
And there are frustrating moments. It's not pleasant when I'm around watching a hockey game. I'll just admit, unless you're totally into the game.
It's a lot of fun to watch a game with you.
Is it?
Yeah, because you're into it. You're passionate. And you
and I take over all the panic attacks anybody else might have.
That's right. You know, and it's really a lot of fun to watch a game with you.
No, and you know, Sam nailed it. This you can never count them out.
They've played 16 Game Sixes under Coach Q. 16.
Is that right?
Yes.
They're 15-1.
Right.
In Game Six, they've only lost a Game Six one time.
Wow.
And, since 2009.
And I believe in Game Sevens.
2-2.
Yeah, we're 2-2. So, you know, flip the coin there. It's going to be tense, and there's no doubt about it. And my daughter Kate, who's a student at Mizzou, she was texting me Thursday night because she was surrounded by all of her friends from Missouri who happened to be those fans of that St. Louis team.
The other team.
And so she was basically asking for trash talk advice because she felt she was ganged up on. So I said, well, I just have a simple response. I said, ask everybody in the room to raise their hand if they've bought next season's St. Louis Rams football season tickets yet. And she said, Dad, that's really cold. And I said, well, hey, if you're going to trash talk, you got to get in there. And so,
that's right.
Needless to say, it's so nice to be and I was so expecting last Sunday that, you know, bringing back to home ice that the Hawks were going to win, and then they lost. And it was just, I had that feeling of dread. But here again, we're all back in the ballgame. And, plus, like I said, stressing out over Arrieta's no-hitter on top of it. And despite the loss to the Reds yesterday, kind of ironic that they lose 13-5 because that's what their record is, 13-5. But they were due for one, and not every game is going to be a huge blowout. But it's a kind of ironic that after just really thumping the Reds in two series so far, this was the first time that they have the opposing team had scored in double digits against the Cubs this year. But a lot of excitement, and a lot of excitement on the South side too. That same night, that Thursday night, was when the Sox pulled off one of the most bizarre triple plays I've ever seen in my life. And I forget how many, you know, that would fill out your entire scorecard, I think, just to list all the players involved.
There were six numbers, the magic numbers. I think they were 9, 2, 3, 5, 6, 2. That would be the shorthand baseball numbers. But it started in right field and then ended at the plate.
And Sam, you played the lotto with those numbers,
yes,
right?
I tried. Even though there was the same number twice.
I understand. Well, yes.
I'm going to play number two twice. You can't do that, sir.
No. But, the sports is just so exciting. I mean, it's just a great time right now. And although Schwani warned me about, as far as baseball, remember, it's only April.
So we're going to go back to Oh Ye of Little Faith here again.
You're the one who said it. I didn't. Okay? Let me enjoy the good times while it lasts.
Before we start talking about the budget, we'll talk about sports.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed, indeed. Well, just let's go Blackhawks. Let's go Hawks. Dave's here to keep us up on the news. Sam's here with all of our sports. Producer Jasmine is fielding your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/SundaySpin, The Sunday Spin, and also on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here to make sure that the show doesn't run off the rails. As always, if you have to tune away, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcast at iTunes. Just search for my name, Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got a great show today. Joining me after Dave's 7:30 news update is Tony Arnold, and Tony's the excellent political reporter at WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. We'll be talking about the events of the past week from Springfield to Chicago. After the 8 o'clock news from Dave, we'll be speaking to Republican State Senator Matt Murphy from Palatine. It was a busy week in Springfield, and we'll see if that deal on short-term emergency funding for higher education is really a breakthrough in the state budget impasse. Then, after the 8:30 news update, we've got Democratic State Representative Lou Lang of Skokie, and Representative Lang is the sponsor of legislation that could lead to a graduated income tax in Illinois. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We'll be giving a little bit of a homage to Prince occasionally during the broadcast. A busy week again in national politics. Lots to talk about. The presidential campaign spinning through 5 northeastern states on Tuesday. Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Maryland, and Delaware. If you're keeping track, the big prize, of course, is Pennsylvania. There's 17 statewide delegates at stake. In addition, there's for Republicans, 54 Republican delegates who are also directly elected, like Illinois, 3 from each of the state's 18 congressional districts. Unlike Illinois, they don't have the little parentheses behind their name who says who they're aligned with. So that and frankly, they're not bound to any particular candidate. But it's kind of interesting to see how that will shake out. 189 Democratic delegates in Pennsylvania. Then you've got Maryland, 38 Republican delegates, 95 Democratic delegates. Connecticut, 55 Democratic delegates, 28 Republican delegates. Now, you also had over on Saturday more of this kind of Republican wrangling over delegate selection processes. There were 94 delegates up for grabs yesterday in various state conventions. And Ted Cruz, once again, showing the organization, snatched at least 65 of those 94 delegates. On Saturday, he nearly won 19 of the 20 seats available in Maine, losing to just one Trump backer, and that's the Maine governor, Paul LePage. You've got Ted Cruz, as I said, talking about his organization. Ted Cruz also says on a Fox News interview that he's the only candidate who can unite a divided GOP and a divided nation.
It is critical to unite the party, not only to unite the Republican Party, but to unite America. And that is my number one focus right now, is uniting the party and ultimately uniting the country. Of the 17 Republican candidates who started this campaign, 5 are now supporting our campaign. We've been endorsed by Rick Perry, by Lindsey Graham, by Jeb Bush, by Scott Walker and Carly Fiorina. That is an incredible array. It is geographically diverse across the country. It is ideologically diverse. It is the full array of the Republican Party that's coming together and unifying. And that's what we've got to do, is stand together. We've got to bring together not just Republicans, but independents, libertarians, Democrats.
Now, Ohio Governor John Kasich, looking to broker himself as the candidate at a contested convention, he says he thinks there should be a balance struck between religious liberty and non-discrimination. Here's what he told CNN.
There is a legitimate concern for people being able to have their deeply held religious beliefs, religious liberty. But there's also people who we shouldn't be discriminating against. We need to have a balance. We need to strike a balance. And I just wish that everybody would just take a breath and calm down, because you see, trying to figure out how to legislate that balance is complicated, and you keep doing do-overs because nobody gets it right. So if we would just kind of calm down here, I think things would settle down. And what I like to say is, just relax. If you don't like what somebody's doing, pray for them. And if you feel as though somebody is doing something wrong against you, can you just for a second get over it, you know?
Get over it, you know? As for the Republican frontrunner, Donald Trump, his newly hired advisors are trying to tell everyone that his stage presence is just an act, and that he's really competent to run the United States. But now they're backtracking on that, and they're saying, no, that's not what we really said. But what they didn't explain were Trump's recent comments in Buffalo about September 11th. Remember, it's September 11th.
I think what I want to do is I want to talk just for a second. I wrote this out, and it's very close to my heart, because I was down there, and I watch our police and our firemen down on 7-Eleven, down at the World Trade Center, right after it came down. And I saw the greatest people I've ever seen in action. I saw the bravest people I've ever seen, including the construction workers, including every person down there. That's what New York values about.
Yes, you remember that 7-Eleven, right? The Treasury Department last week also announced famed anti-slavery icon Harriet Tubman would appear on the $20 bill replacing Andrew Jackson, a slave owner. Trump didn't appear to know much about Tubman and called the move on the Today Show political correctness.
I think Harriet Tubman is fantastic. I would love to leave Andrew Jackson and see if we can maybe come up with another denomination. Maybe we do the $2 bill or we do another bill. I don't like seeing it. Yes, I think it's pure political correctness. Been on the bill for many, many years and, you know, really represented somebody that really was very important to this country. I would love to see another denomination, and that could take place. I think it would be more appropriate.
Now, of course, you have Trump citing the $2 bill as a possibility for Harriet Tubman. The trouble is the U.S. doesn't print $2 bills anymore. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, my good friend Tony Arnold, political reporter at WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Donald Trump, of course, still drawing a lot of attention, and we've heard a lot about vulnerable Republicans who say they're trying to stay away from Trump and the controversy that he always brings. Several senators, including Mark Kirk, are skipping the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. But in Kentucky, one Republican congressional candidate wants to help Trump. Here's Mike Pape. It's a controversial ad which features three alleged undocumented immigrants trying to cut a fence and enter the United States.
Once through, we'll stop Donald Trump.
See, Ted Cruz, too?
The senor, my Pape.
Who?
My Pape.
Pape?
Pape, my Pape. The conservative running for Congress who helped Trump build the wall.
Will this Mike Pape help Ted Cruz repeal Obamacare?
See?
We must stop Mike Pape.
I'm Mike Pape, and I approve this message because no one will stop me from standing up for you.
Yeah, it's amazing we don't get ads like that in Illinois. You have to find them in Kentucky. Also, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley is a chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's kind of the frontline guy under Mitch McConnell's leadership who says there's not going to be any hearings on Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia. Senator Grassley told reporters out in Iowa that Merrick Garland is no moderate.
when we had a Republican caucus recently, people put up on the screen certain adjectives describing a Ginsburg, a Breyer, a Sotomayor, and a Kagan. And always in these headlines, at the time they were nominated, that adjective was the word moderate, just like Garland. Well, we know how those four have turned out. So don't believe what you read in the press about people's basic philosophy, because they got it all wrong and probably intentionally all wrong.
Intentionally all wrong. So, you know, it's always good to be a part of the media, as Tony Arnold, my friend from BEZ-FM, WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio, here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio. Always the classic,
don't believe everything you hear on the radio, you know.
There you go. there's a good predicate for our conversation this morning. Tony, thanks for getting up and joining me this morning.
Of course. Good to be here.
A lot going on in politics, and a lot going on in Springfield, where on Friday, after months and months and months of indecision, we saw almost like a sign of spring, maybe a little green sprout that came out of the wasteland with a short-term emergency stopgap rescue of $600 million from the Educational Assistance Fund, bipartisan approval, and Governor Bruce Rauner says he will sign that.
And it's been sent to him. We're waiting for the governor to officially sign it and send that, release that money to the universities that haven't received a dime from the state in 10 months, which is just really unprecedented. For universities to not have been paid in that long. I mean, this is, and I think you're right. The question is, there's a few questions that come out of this, but one of the big ones is, does this mean that there's hope for a bigger compromise down the road between the Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan and the Democrats? Or is this a flash in the pan, one-time experience? We're just going to throw some money at them and figure, see what's next. I don't know the answer to that, but I think that there's actually some clues that give us some that maybe can give us some answers. But I think my big question is, just, we went 10 months without funding universities in this state. So what changed? Why did they do this now as opposed to in December or last July? And I think that there's a few different things. One is that we've seen them do this before, in that just as winter was coming, they released some money to pay for salt for the roads. That's one example. So when there's some time or some pressure coming for a specific service, we can see them all come together and say, okay, here's some money.
Crisis.
It's crisis. And what's going on with universities right now that would lead to the crisis? Well, The top of the list, but maybe the most time pressing, is Chicago State University on Chicago Southside, which is having graduation early. And it's 5 days away now. It was supposed to be next month, and now
they're
going to do it.
They canceled spring break.
They canceled spring break
to accelerate their calendar.
Exactly, just to get through everything faster, because they're going to run out of money. And then on Friday they're supposed to close. I haven't seen exactly what this money will do. I don't know if they know fully yet what this money can do for the university over the summer, but in the short term, universities on Thursday, and that's, I think, was one of the big driving factors for why this needed to be done now. On top of that, the legislature's not in this week because of Passover, so there was some time sensitivity there to get something through, which I think was the motivation. But at the same time, that debate that happened over the course of 12 hours, there was one debate Thursday night and another debate Friday morning. It showed that, okay, we're going to release some money for universities, but something else over here hasn't been paid either, and that's social services. And the difference, I think, between what you're seeing with the universities and social services, there's and why the state's funding one and the other's supposedly going to be negotiated this coming week, you know, with Chicago State in particular, you're seeing protests. You're seeing people being active and engaging lawmakers before some really big cuts could be coming. Now, with social services, you know, there've been big cuts to Lutheran social services, and supposedly big cuts are going to be coming to another big organization, Catholic Charities. But we haven't seen people aren't in the streets and protesting over those cuts.
Or the ones who are protesting are the unions that mm-hmm. provide, like Service Employees International Union Healthcare. They're the provider types
right.
that are protesting, because, you know, it's as always, it's kind of like the most vulnerable don't really have a lobbying force.
And that was a big point from the people who were reluctant to send money to universities, was we got to do something else here for social services. They're always at the bottom of the list. You heard that from several lawmakers, both Republicans and Democrats, on that front.
But when you look at the university's issues, and you start, one, obviously you mentioned Chicago State University, which has a strong African-American student population, is much more dependent on state money than other public universities are, and the potential of that being closed, that university being closed, and how it uniquely serves a varied students of varied ages, non-traditional students, those kinds of things, and the political kind of fallout that would occur from that. And then you look at where some of these public universities are located elsewhere in the state, and while we all tend to think of universities kind of more of a liberal type faculty and base, not every place is Champaign-Urbana,
right.
and there are a lot of they're in a lot of Republican districts, and you know that these Republican lawmakers, after being told to vote no on various bills that didn't necessarily provide a funding source. This one is different because it actually, there is a funding source. It exists. You know, those Republican legislators were chafing about being told no and how that affects their constituency.
Yeah. And there's a, you know, what you heard in debate was that there is a bill on the governor's desk right now that does send even more money to universities and social services than the bill that passed on Friday morning. That's just some money to universities. The issue with that bill, the one that funds both universities and social services, Republicans say, well, there's no funding mechanism for it. It's just you're just throwing money at the situation. It's unbalanced. It's not paid for. And so that's, they opposed it. Rauner has said that he's going to veto it. I don't even know that the votes are going to be there to override the veto, which they may have known when they passed it. There were a couple of Democrats who didn't vote for that bill,
right?
Which, if all the Democrats stuck together, they could override anything from the governor. But they haven't all stuck together in many instances.
As we've seen,
so that's the complication with that bill. So this is the compromise: is that We'll send some money to universities. It gets them through some months. The criticism on that concept. The other thing is that Jack Franks is a Democrat in the northwestern suburbs,
McHenry County.
He was saying, you know, so we're going to give universities some money. This gets them through the summer, and then what happens in September? We're right back to where we are now. So we're just going to keep going from one crisis to the next crisis to the next one, or are we actually going to do something bigger here and do a bigger budget? And I think that question is we're going to see that one play out here in the next few weeks to see if there is an actual budget that can be negotiated in one way or the other coming up for the next year.
Well, we'll explore that a little bit further. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
We'll be right back. of view. While the women came and went, barefoot servants too.
We're doing a little homage here to Prince today. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Tony Arnold, political reporter at WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. And we've been talking about this emergency funding bill for higher education. Higher education was like the rest of the state budget that was vetoed out. It was the only the grade and high school education that was funded. This emergency $600 million short-term payment does, I think, include one semester of monetary award program grants. That's the grants for tuition and school funding assistance for students from low-income families. But we've got a call from Ryan, and Ryan is a student at Western Illinois University. Ryan, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you.
I just wanted to call and follow up, just kind of give a perspective on what's going on at Western Illinois. I think the biggest problem right now, there's a fear among the students. A lot of the incoming freshmen are worried that they're not going to be able to get through their senior year because the school might close. And another big problem, a lot of the building sanitation workers, the people that run the residence halls and the people that run the grounds and everything, they're being put on furloughs, and a lot of them are being laid off, and some of them have been there for up to 30 years, and they're going to lose their state pension.
Well, and Ryan, thank you for the insight. And, you know, Tony, it was places like that that I was kind of talking to where these are the lifeblood of these rural areas, at Western at Macomb and Eastern in Charleston. They're the economic lifeline. These are, you know, areas, rural areas that perhaps in the past were also supported by manufacturing or mining, that kind of thing. And these are also schools that don't have the big endowment that, you know, a flagship university like the U of I has, or even a place like Southern Illinois University has.
Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois University, too. I mean, these are all just, when you think about these are public institutions. They're traditionally government funded, and then here for 10 months to not get a dime. What he's talking, you know, the caller's talking about is how we've seen some of these universities downstate and in upstate Illinois, like how they're dealing with not getting any money, and it's been a lot of furlough days, and it's, I think it's been the most dramatic maybe at Chicago State, but that's gotten a lot of the attention. But these other universities have had layoffs or getting close to announcing layoffs,
so program cuts. And Ryan also makes a good point too about, you know, these current freshmen, about, you know, will there still be a school to graduate from? Not only that, you also have, you know, this is the time of year where high school seniors are right, making their picks. And, you know, let's face it, we even hear it from some of the legislators. It's like, I don't know that I would tell you to go to a state.
I'd be curious to see what those conversations between high school guidance counselors and their students are like. So anyone who's considering going to some of these universities that, frankly, the future of these universities is like, what's that going to look like? What's that education going to look like? Are they going to have to do... Are other universities going to have to do what Chicago State did, which is accelerate graduation or make drastic moves to get through the semester?
Or even if you start as a freshman and perhaps you have an idea of what you want to major in, that major may not even be offered by the time, you know, traditionally the junior year when you enter into your major. The course offerings could dramatically change.
I think it's worth saying, too, what this is about, what some of the fight in Springfield is about related to this, because the governor's saying it's not like anyone's opposed to funding universities. It's the debate is, you know, what Rauner's saying is that universities have their hands tied when it comes to the procurement code, which is kind of a fancy word for
purchasing.
Yeah, exactly. Just buying stuff. So, and what one person's red tape is another person's regulations or just, you know, safeguards for improper spending. So there's questions about how can we loosen this up to get things moving faster.
Well, and even with the governor, there's a larger issue too, is that he believes that these universities, they're pampered and bloated administratively.
He has said that, yeah.
And you know, he believes in classroom money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here in part, I think by design too, is to use the budget impasse to try to wring some efficiencies, in his view, out of these universities.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the one of the questions, so this money that was passed on Friday had none of these changes to policies involved. It was just, we're going to give you some money to get through the next few months. And I think the larger fight coming up is going to be over what those regulations look like coming up. That's kind of the preview of where we're going here on that front. But when you look at the overall budget and where we're going with things outside of just universities, there's many other larger issues that have been raised here that are going to be talked about. And next up here in the next month here, Chicago Public Schools is threatening a strike, which some of what the teachers union there is saying is related to what's going on in Springfield and at the State House. So there's so many large moving pieces right now that the drama is just going to be really State House focused here for the next month or two.
And we'll be talking about that in the next hour with State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine, and State Representative Lou Lang about where do we go from here. Tony Arnold, a political reporter at WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin is State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine, Deputy Republican Leader in the Illinois State Senate.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the second hour of The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here on the sunny Mag Mile in the Allstate Showcase studio. Very beautiful day with the temperatures going to be warming up. And I'm glad Sam played that clip of John calling that HOSA goal. I mean, that, like I said earlier, that was just icing on the cake from our own blue line all the way down. And sure, it's an empty netter, but it just magnified how important that win was last night. Sam, tell me if I'm wrong.
I could play it again for you first if you want.
Sure.
Marian HOSA swinging it from the Hawk line into the empty Blues net. It's 6-3 Hawks with 2:20 left on the clock. And the United Center is up for grabs. We're headed to Game 7.
That'll wake you up on a Sunday morning.
It? Oh, but what a way to wake up.
Absolutely.
And nobody does it better than John and Troy. And, of course, you're making a big mistake if you don't listen to them Monday for Game 7 with the pregame at 7 or
pregame at 7, puck drop probably at 9:40.
9:40.
Did you see what the league said to Pat Foley? They sort of took what he said with a grain of salt because he was complaining that, you know, kids and have to go to school, people have to work the next day because the Thursday game ended after midnight.
Well, I think, frankly, I think everybody's siding with Pat Foley on this one. I mean, you go to a double overtime game on a puck drop that starts at 8:40, and who does it serve?
The West Coast?
Well, but you have two teams in the Central Time Zone. And, yes, I know we're in the Western, quote, Western Division, and maybe we'd rather be in the Eastern Division with back with our original six partners. But that's not the case. And why the Central Time Zone is just getting nailed in this series, I don't know. But at least we won't have to go through that on Game 7.
I would guess puck drop, if I was going to really try and put a guess on it, it would be about 7:48 on Monday night.
Yeah. So, that's better than 8:40, which... That doesn't, especially on a Monday night, you know, it's what can I say? Well, you know what, we were talking about the Republican contest for president and, you know, on the Democratic side, as Dave played that clip from ABC about Bernie Sanders, says he's in it, you know, till the end. But Hillary Clinton has been making a lot of campaign appearances in Pennsylvania. Recently, she was in Pittsburgh at Premonti Brothers in Market Square in advance of the Tuesday Pennsylvania primary. I actually remember covering Hillary Clinton in 2008 at Market Square, and my friend David Green, who hosts Morning Edition on National Public Radio, he's a Pittsburgh native, and so he arranged that we all got Primanti Brothers sandwiches. And, yeah, every city's got, like, their unique food, right? But this is like a sandwich that has French fries, like steak-cut French fries on top. And it was just, I couldn't eat it. It was just, I mean, if that's what they call food in Pittsburgh, you know, have at it. But this is Hillary Clinton talking about the Pennsylvania primary.
Well, I'm sure going to work hard because I care deeply about Pennsylvania, and Western Pennsylvania has been a place that has had a kind of mixed story.
And that's Hillary Clinton. Joining me now on the phone is State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine and Deputy Republican Leader of the Illinois State Senate. Senator, thank you for getting up and joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Anytime.
I know it was quite a week in Springfield, and as we were talking with Tony Arnold earlier, perhaps, you know, capping off the week with the passage of that short-term stopgap emergency $600 million rescue plan to try to keep higher education afloat. And the question everybody has is this kind of perhaps a shining light into bigger and better days ahead, or is this just a one-off?
And that is the right question to ask. And, you know, I tend to look at these things with the glasses half full. You know, you saw not just the higher ed bill, where all four caucuses and the governor came together. And I think it's important to note everybody came together because, you know, there is, following tax day, increased revenue coming into the Education Assistance Fund. So we can actually, you know, allocate money. The $600 million is actually there to give the school.
Right, it's real money.
It's real money now. It's not just a show. And so that made it a little bit easier, I think, for everybody to come together. So that was really encouraging that people, you know, when there was an opportunity to provide real money, nobody played politics with this thing in the end anyway, and it got done. The other thing I think that was kind of encouraging that happened around the same time was, you know, the governor – the governor, Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans all came together on a bill for another $450 million for social services, who are in a very similar situation in a lot of cases, if not worse, frankly, to our higher ed institutions. We were able to pass, you know, that money was identified as well, and we were able to pass, again, it's just a bridge, it's a stopgap. But we were able to pass that on a bipartisan basis out of the Senate, and it's something the governor supports. So we're going to find out when the House comes back. The House isn't in next week, unfortunately, but we're going to find out when the House comes back if Speaker Madigan is in favor of that proposal or not.
Well, and you know, one of the things, and we talk about, you know, crisis helping to drive policy, and the legislature tends to traditionally be a reactive body than a proactive body. And the way I look at it is that when you start looking at things like Chicago State University, but also those universities out in rural parts of the state that are basically the economic lifeline, and it's not just people working at the universities, but it's the universities and buying things from local businesses and the incomes that help of the workers that help drive those rural economies, and seeing those in a crisis or threatened mode, that the motivation was there regardless of political ideology.
Right. Well, and I think, yeah, the motivation was there, which was great to see. It was, for us on the Republican side, it was also great to see, you know, that we had the opportunity to put in the money that we actually have. We were able to identify money and only spend what we actually had. But it's enough to bridge these universities till August. Now, hopefully between now and August, there is a broader deal done. My hope is these two issues can serve sort of as trust builders in the Capitol, and provide maybe a little bit of momentum to maybe step out and do some more some things on a more comprehensive basis and see if we can finally strike that grand bargain that I think everybody feels is necessary to put this all behind us and start moving Illinois forward.
We're speaking with State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine, the deputy Republican leader of the Illinois Senate. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. I never meant to cause you sorrow. I never meant to cause you any pain. I don't want to one time see you laughing, babe. Only want to see you laughing, yeah, in the purple rain, purple. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, our little homage to Prince. Joining me on the phone, State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine. We're talking about the last week in Springfield and the short-term stopgap emergency funding measure for higher education. And, Senator, I'm glad you brought up that second bill, too, the $441 million that would be allocated from a special fund to try to help these social service providers as we see this kind of safety net for those most vulnerable, you know, just collapsing. And, yeah, there is a big question. The Senate passed that 55-0. Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio made a point, and it's a point that I kind of end my story with in today's Tribune about it's really about the revenue, and there is an identified revenue source, but no one should be misled that stopgap higher ed bill or even this emergency funding for social services is the end-all be-all here.
Well, no, it isn't, because they are stopgaps. They are bridges, hopefully, to a global resolution that the speaker actually can engage in. You know, they're positive signs because the bar has been set so low in Springfield that, you know, there was
that's always the case.
There was compromise. There was agreement. There was everybody putting aside their own personal issues in assessing the problem that had become pretty critical and getting a job done. And so, I'm pleased to see that that's possible. And I think, you know, we're trying to hopefully look at this as optimistic signs of momentum going forward. But yeah, no, I think Leader Redonio used the phrase, let's not break our arms, patting ourselves on the back, and I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, one thing that was noteworthy about the higher ed bill and also this pending bridge bill for social services, there was not the attachment of the turnaround agenda from the governor. Where does that fall, and is that... I mean, is that a sign that agenda is maybe moving down as far as a priority of the governor?
No, not at all. I mean, the governor ran to improve our jobs climate and, you know, make this state a lot more economically healthy. And you're not going to do that by continuing to do what we had done the 12 years before he became governor. So that hasn't changed. What you hear all the time about the governor from the Democrats is he won't compromise. He won't compromise. He wants it his way or the highway. Well, if he wanted it his way or the highway, Rick, why weren't there strings attached to these proposals? If he's completely unwilling to compromise, why was he willing to sign these measures without some of the reforms in place? It's because he is willing to compromise. He is open to certain ideas. Why is he not talking about right to work anymore? That was an important initiative to him. The supermajority Democrats in the legislature said, that's utterly anathema to us. We can't do it. The governor took it off the table. But we can't go back to doing what we already tried. just raising taxes and not changing anything else was tried back in 2011. We saw the largest spike in unemployment of any state in the country in the first calendar year after that was done, and that tax increase didn't solve our problems. We didn't have this huge improvement in job quality and job opportunities here. We didn't pay down our deficit completely as was promised. So there's a lot of work to be done, and you're not going to do it just by raising taxes, which so far is it appears what Speaker Madigan wants to do, just put the 5% back on and keep rolling. And I just don't think that's what the people want.
Well, and I'm going to have State Representative Lou Lang on in the last half hour, and he's sponsoring the bill that would effectively put in tax rates for a graduated income tax if a graduated income tax constitutional amendment were to ever pass and be authorized by the voters. And you know, we all know.
I find Lou much more compelling when he's talking about the Blackhawks.
we'll probably talk about that a little bit too. But
a fine Blackhawks fan he is, but I think he's off base on the graduated income tax.
How so?
Well, look, you know, they're going to sell this thing as a tax on the rich, and the rich are going to finally pay their fair share. And you know, if you're in that middle class, making 50 to 250 somewhere in there, you're already paying over half of the taxes. And you know what? In the history of this country, the middle class has always borne the weight of carrying the taxes because there's the most people in the middle class. When they put an amendment in at the federal level back in 1913, they said, well, it's never going to get above 4%, the federal income tax rate. Now, you all saw where that went. The truth of the matter is, once they take that flat tax out, you watch. If you're in the middle class, they're going to sell you on this being a tax on the rich. But you know, if you're in the middle class from history and experience, in the end, they're coming for your money with this. You know, so they can say what bill they're going to run originally if they get the chance to tax more. But in the end, they're coming for the middle class. And this will, on top of us having some of the highest property taxes, on top of us having some of the highest sales taxes, especially in this area, this is going to put us, I think the Tax Federation ran the numbers on Lou's bill, this would make us 48th again in tax burden. That's not how you get us to an economy where people have the best opportunity possible to get the best job they're capable of doing. That's how you stay down among the worst job growth states in the country rather than growing to be among the best.
For a comprehensive budget agreement, it's going to have to involve spending cuts and new revenue. And if you look at what the governor has talked about as a grand goal for education and changing the school aid formula at some point, and every school district is held harmless, I mean, we're going to be talking about either a lot of revenue or a lot of shifting of revenue, aren't we?
Well, the governor has made clear that he'd be willing to sign the tax increase that the speaker has indicated he wants to push through. And look, we have real challenges because of years of mismanagement in Springfield. I mean, our budget is tied up in things like the pension payment, where, you know, most states' budget is 5 to 7%, or their pension payment's 5 to 7% of their budget. In Illinois, it's over 20%. That's huge money. That right there alone, the difference there is the difference between being able to balance a 3.75 and not. The Affordable Care Act under President Obama ties our hands on Medicaid. Medicaid is the largest line item in our budget. And then, as you said, Rick, K-12, you know, we're 49th in funding K-12 from the state. Now, we're fourth in overall spending, but from the state, we're 49th. So, you know, you've got three things right there that are the vast majority of our money, and it gets tough to go to, you know, we're going to cut prisons, we're going to cut roads, we're going to cut social services. It's going to be a real challenge to make it all work. The governor has said he's willing to compromise on that. But again, the key factor is you've got to put the reforms in place that can bring the cost of doing business down in other areas to make us a little more attractive to job creators. Because the stat that haunts me the most is since 2000, the U.S. economy has produced 15 million new jobs. Over that time period, Illinois has lost 100,000 as the fifth largest state in the country. So we've got to change how we're operating if we're going to give people the best chance possible to succeed. And how we go about, you know, just taxing and not reforming anything isn't going to change that dynamic. We've got to fundamentally change the way we're operating in Springfield.
That's State Senator Matt Murphy, Republican from Palatine and Deputy Republican Leader of the Illinois Senate. Thank you so much, Senator, for joining me this morning.
My pleasure, Rick. Let's get a win on Monday.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, State Representative Lou Lang, Deputy Democratic Leader of the Illinois House.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. I mentioned Bernie Sanders earlier, Sanders saying he's going to stay in till the end, June 7th, when California, the delegate-rich state, holds its election. But the real Sanders strategy seems to be trying to gain delegates by attempting to switch those superdelegates from Hillary Clinton to himself. At an event in Pennsylvania, he mocked Clinton for the money she made by giving closed-door speeches to Wall Street for big bucks.
And I kind of think that if you got $225,000 for an hour speech or maybe a 20-minute speech or whatever it may be, it must be a speech of extraordinary brilliance. Don't you think? It must be a speech which probably solves all of the planetary crises that we face. It is a speech written in beautiful Shakespearean prose. And I think any speech that great should be released to the American people.
That's Bernie Sanders campaigning in Pennsylvania. Well, joining me now on the phone is State Representative Lou Lang, Democrat from Skokie and Deputy Democratic Leader of the Illinois House. Representative, thank you for joining me this morning.
Always a great pleasure, Rick.
I had State Senator Matt Murphy on in the previous half hour, and he was speaking critically about your proposal to try to bring a graduated income tax to Illinois, saying that he believes it's just a precursor to raising taxes on the middle class.
Well, I'm guessing he hasn't really read it. So this is a proposal that's been in the making for some time, and there's been many iterations of it, and it hasn't gone too far over the years because it's been too top-heavy. It's raised too much money. It has hurt the middle class. But this proposal is one that will provide 99% of taxpayers with a tax cut and still raise $1.9 billion to help us with many things we need to do in the state. We all know we need revenue, and this is a good way to do it. But if you say to people, we're going to take money from everyone, not a good idea. There's still a lot of people hurting out there. We need to provide a tax cut to people so they can put money back in the economy, save for college and all the other things they want to do. And this proposal will do that. 99% of our taxpayers will save money under this plan.
Now, in order to even get to that point, we would have to approve a constitutional amendment.
That's correct. Two things have to pass to even have a shot at this. Representative Christian Mitchell has a proposal that simply changes the Constitution that would allow us to get off the flat tax and have other options for taxation. Tax reform, tax fairness, that's what it's all about. Now, the legislature can't do that on its own. The legislature can merely put it on the ballot for people to decide, but I will say this. In a very significant poll that was taken recently, over 70%, I think it was 74% of Illinoisans support a plan where we would go off the flat tax and have a more fair tax system to provide tax cuts to most of our citizens.
But for the legislature to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot requires a 3/5 majority of each chamber. And does that three-fifths majority in each chamber exist?
It's certainly going to be difficult to do. I believe the votes are there in the Illinois Senate at the moment, and we may be a few votes short in the Illinois House. We're spending a lot of time talking to members. We would ask regular, ordinary constituents out there to call your legislators. I've gotten a good and bad email on this. A good email from people who have read the proposal. Bad email from people who have not read the proposal. Someone sent me a Facebook message. It called me all sorts of names. And in one paragraph, I explained what we were trying to do, and then he thanked me. When people understand what this is all about and they understand that we're trying to provide tax breaks to the middle class, then they'll have a different point of view on it.
But one of the problems in the past has been the idea that on its own, the constitutional amendment would not state any tax rates. And that kind of nebulous wording leads to a great deal of criticism.
I'm not certain that's correct, or it maybe it does lead to criticism, but I'm not sure it's well-founded. It would be inappropriate to put tax rates in the Constitution of the state of Illinois. What the proposal will do is give the General Assembly the option of making the changes that we feel we need to make to create tax fairness across the board.
Right. And I mean, I just remember that a previous Senate proposal kind of ran into some hurdles over that fact of the question of the uncertainty of taxation and tax rates, making it kind of something that would be easy to attack. I assume that by you moving your plan forward is an attempt to assuage those criticisms.
That's right. We wanted to do these in tandem. And so we're not just simply saying, give us carte blanche to make any changes we want. We're going to tell people what those changes are. And I can tell you that when people understand what's in the proposal, they're for it.
And so a vote on that actually has to happen fairly quick as far as the proposed constitutional amendment.
To get a constitutional amendment on the ballot for this November, it has to pass both chambers of the General Assembly with a three-fifths majority by the 6th of May. The House isn't even in this coming week, and so that would leave us one more week before the 6th of May. I anticipate a vote on it. I do not know how that vote will go at the present time. It will be pretty close one way or the other.
I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what happened on Friday as far as the emergency stopgap rescue of higher education, the $600 million from the Educational Assistance Fund for universities, community colleges, and MAP grants, enough to kind of bridge things over through the summer. And, you know, this was perhaps not to make that big a deal out of it, but it was a big deal. After all of these months of gridlock and impasse, to see bipartisan support for that kind of legislation. What happened?
The specter of Chicago State University simply closing its doors and other universities in our state, like Eastern and Western, having very significant problems, I think every legislator felt we needed to do something. And the something we did was to keep them open for a period of time, but there are some severe concerns about what we passed. While I voted for it and while it was clearly the right thing to do, there are other issues that lie ahead. For instance, how long will these dollars work to keep these universities open? If there aren't further bipartisan discussions and a completeness to our budget mess, then they're just simply going to have additional problems down the road. Will Chicago State and others be able to open for the second semester of the next academic year? Will the MAP grant money be there for the neediest of the needy to be able to go to college and complete the college education? These are unanswered questions. And if all we've done is kick the can down the road, but we don't have a solution, what we will have done is give a lifeline to these folks, but only for a very short period of time.
We're speaking with Lou Lang, State Representative Democrat from Skokie and Deputy Democratic Leader of the Illinois House. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
hops, the mighty Manhattan hops. Take the attack.
I played that for you, Representative Lang.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a great tune, especially this morning.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. State Representative Lou Lang, Democratic Deputy Democratic Leader of the Illinois House, joining me. Representative, going back to that proposal on the graduated income tax, and you point out that, you know, were this to become law, you're talking about a total revenue gain of $1.9 billion. And when we saw the tax rate fall as scheduled, the fact that that was anywhere from a loss of revenue of $3 billion to $4 billion, the fact that this would raise $1.9 billion, is that an acknowledgement that there would also be spending cuts?
We have said for some time that we need a combination of new revenue and cuts. Going back to last May when the General Assembly passed a budget that was largely vetoed by the governor, we said at that time that we had provided cuts, almost $1 billion in cuts from the previous year. It wasn't enough. We said it wasn't enough. We said it needed new revenue. And in fact, the governor acknowledges that we need new revenue, but he's held the budget and the people of the state of Illinois hostage for his personal political agenda, and it's simply wrong to have done that. So we believe a combination of cuts and new revenue are appropriate to get the state back on track.
Well, and, I mean, let's face it, one of the facts in this bridge funding bill for higher ed, it lacked that those prerequisites of the turnaround agenda that the governor had sought. There's also a bill, speaking to Senator Murphy about this, a bill that passed 55-0 from the Senate on Friday, which would provide $441 million in bridge funding from an established fund to go to social service providers that are not covered by a consent decree or court order. Has there been any decision made in the House about whether to proceed with that bill?
Not as of yet, but I want to add that our need for human services is much greater than $400 million. There have been huge cuts, huge pain to the social service network in the state of Illinois. And that bill really, to me, doesn't signal any great thaw between Republicans and Democrats or between the General Assembly and the governor. That was money that was sitting in essence, a lockbox. It was easy to vote for that. There's no pain involved in voting for that. No angst.
Well,
we have a lot more to do.
And that's kind of one of the, I guess, one of the criticisms even of doing the higher ed bill is that everybody acknowledges that this is not a full funding kind of bill for higher ed. There's concern about, you know, where does this take people off the hook, as you mentioned, kick the can down the road. And you know, you have university presidents who were in Springfield saying, you know, well, you know, obviously we'll take it, but where does that leave us for the next school year?
In fact, if that's all we do for higher education, we will have given our state university systems a 70% cut, and it is likely that the governor will want to start bargaining for the 2017 fiscal budget with that number. And so we're going to start not only finishing our previous fiscal year with a 70% cut, but the governor is going to start the negotiations for the next fiscal year with that as the base. It is a terrible specter for the future of higher education in the state of Illinois.
Do you get calls from parents saying, you know, should I send my kid to a state university?
No, I get calls from parents saying they're not sending their kid to a state university. They're worried about MAP grants. They're worried about the future of these schools. Certainly, the University of Illinois is not going to close. They have a huge endowment, and they'll live off of it for a while. But Eastern, Western, Chicago State, some of our community colleges are all in severe trouble. And to add to that, tuition has gone up dramatically. And so if you can send your child to a university out of state and the out-of-state tuition is less than or equal to the in-state tuition at one of our state universities that is teetering, you as a parent, you as a student are going to say, why should I take that risk? I'm going to go somewhere else.
We've got a call from Nancy. Nancy, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Thanks, Rick. My question is, I work for Will County and Human Services, and we just had massive cuts on Friday, and now they're canceling the adult programs, and this is mental health needs. And the state of Illinois, I think, has enough problems the way it is, but now they're going to start denying services to the neediest people, both children and adults. And we got laid off. There were 54 people laid off. So I'm just wondering what kind of support is going to be offered to these human services programs, and primarily to, you know, the clients of these programs who very possibly could end up with our homeless programs.
All right, Nancy, thank you for your call. Representative?
As a result of the governor's stubbornness and his lack of desire to complete our budget process over his personal political agenda, this has been going on for months, way back since last June and July. Social service providers have been closing left and right. A huge social service provider called Lutheran Social Services just laid off 750 people, which provide programs to thousands and thousands of people. So Nancy's call is just the tip of the iceberg. There is a huge problem that underlies the governor's stubbornness on the budget issues. What he has done is hold us all hostage. What he has done is cost a lot of people jobs and a lot of people the support that the state of Illinois should be bringing to them.
Speaking of this whole budget impasse, we're looking at the fact that here in the city of Chicago, the potential of a teacher's strike next month, the fiscal problems that exist with the city's public schools, and this belief that somehow Springfield can find a way to help. I have to say, there's a lot of people that are not very optimistic about that.
Well, I'm not optimistic today, but the city of Chicago schools are not the only schools in the state of Illinois with severe problems. There are severe problems in many places, central and southern Illinois, places that don't have any kind of property tax base to speak of at all at the moment are hurting badly. We have to overhaul how we fund education in the state of Illinois. We certainly should not ignore the city of Chicago. I would say that half of my district's in the city of Chicago, so I'm very attuned to the issues that involve the city of Chicago and its public schools. I'm a strong supporter. We should do something. But there won't be just a fix, I don't think, for the city of Chicago. We're going to have to do better for everyone in the state.
Does that mean something like Senator Menard's bill, where, you know, actually just kind of blowing open that whole issue of modernizing the state aid formula?
Actually, I'm not a big supporter of Senator Menard's bill. Senator Menard from Central Illinois thinks the best way to get more money to the schools in Central Illinois that need it is to take it from schools that have it. My view would be let's not create mediocre schools where there are good ones just to bring others up from the bottom. What we need to do is find new sources of revenue and add it to the schools who need it rather than to take it from those who are doing well.
That's State Representative Lou Lang, Democrat from Skokie, Deputy Democratic Leader. Representative, thank you for joining me, and I'll be cheering with you those Blackhawks on Monday.
Thanks, Rick. Go Hawks. Have a great day.
You too. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Tony Arnold, from Public Radio in Chicago, WBEZ-FM, State Senator Matt Murphy from Palatine, and State Representative Lou Lang from Skokie. Also want to thank all of you for listening. And, you know, I'm just in such a great mood with the Hawks' victory last night. My buddy Mike Rapps down in Springfield says, Pamplona has a running of the bulls. Chicago has a biting of the nails. I thought that was pretty good.
Wow.
Yes, yes, wow. Yes.
And, I've been enjoying your Prince homage all morning.
Well, you know. Also, by the way. I stayed up for the Hawks game, but then I crashed right after. And I guess SNL, I've been reading these tweets.
I watched a little. I fell asleep in the middle of it. I mean, not because it was boring. It's just I was I was tired.
There's a Dean's review right there.
I'm a person who wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning every day when my body shuts down earlier than most people's. So the fact that I was even able to make it till about 11 o'clock is quite the achievement for me.
Understood.
I watched it, and there was some amazing performances during this.
And they said it wasn't like what I saw was it wasn't like the big hits kind of stuff.
No.
But it just showed a great range.
Showed a great
music.
Range of Prince's music, and I have to go back and watch this today. I DVR'd it, but they showed a performance that had never been on before from the SNL 40th anniversary party, where Taylor Swift was there, and other performers were there and all performing. And I guess Prince impromptu got up and did "Let's Go Crazy" with Chris Rock and Maya Rudolph. That sounds amazing. That I want to go back and see, and maybe we can play some of that later on.
Well, and I watched the NFL had posted the halftime show when Prince did the halftime show in Miami.
That was amazing.
And actually, it's kind of like a documentary about, because it was pouring rain and all of that.
Pouring purple rain.
Yeah, but I had forgotten that was the Bears were in that
was
Super
the Bears.
Bowl.
That was the
that was the Indianapolis Colts.
That was the only part of that game that any of us want to remember. That was amazing. I mean, we've done a lot of Prince coverage on television this week. To see that Prince performance again, and to see Prince's performance at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where he played "My Guitar Gently Weeps." There was a tribute to George Harrison, with Tom Petty and Jeff Beck and some of the other people who are considered the greatest guitar players ever. And Prince made them all look like they were in School of Rock. He was so amazing. That's another clip that you must go and check out.
Oh, fascinating stuff.
I appreciate it. People should tune in to WGNRadio.com during Rick's show. He is wearing all purple velvet today, frilly lace and high heels, and in his continued homage to Prince today. So,
thank you so much for that.
Very nice. Thanks, Rick. Have a great day.